during Navi, we had learned out David had come to the area of Zif. The desert of Zif is an area within Judean territory. So David felt fairly confident. He's with his own family. And the people around him, the Zifim, they go to Shaul, to King Saul, and they say, you know, David is hiding among us. And Shaul says, I know how cunning he is. Do me a favor. Keep a record of all his different hiding places. And we're recapping. Yes, this is where we left off. Of all his different hiding places, so that when he tries to run, I'll be able to catch him. I'll know everything. They map it all out. They give Shaul all the information. Shaul shows up with 3,000 men. And David tries to flee. And Shaul is ready for every trick David has. And David is running. He goes up a mountain. And Shaul does not follow. But instead, he sets up his men to surround the mountain. And they start ascending the mountain. They're closed in, remember? And at that point, David thinks he's finished. He thinks even Shmuel was a liar. About that, David says in Tehillim, Ani amati v'chofzi, I said as I was running, Kol adam kozev, everyone's a liar. You see, even Shmuel's prophecy isn't coming true. And Hashem sends an angel who tells Shaul, you're being attacked. The Philistines have spread out. They're capturing swaths of territory. You have to come back. And so Shaul has no choice. He runs back to take on the Philistine onslaught, and David is saved. And David is in the desert of En Gedi. Shaul takes 3,000 men to seek out David. And here we learned out Shaul had gone into the cave to relieve himself. David was hiding in the back of the cave. And his men said, let's take him down. Hashem's given him into your hands. And David says, I swear, anyone who touches him, I'm finishing him off. This man was anointed by God. We're not allowed to kill him. And so Shaul slices off a corner. David slices off a corner of Shaul's coat. And when Shaul goes out of the cave, so David comes after him. And he calls after him, my master, the king. Shaul turns around. David bows. David says, why do you listen to people who lie to you and try to convince you that I'm trying to harm you? Look, your eyes can see today. Hashem gave you into my hands. Here you were in the cave with me. And my men said, let's kill him. And I said, no, I had mercy over you. And I said, I will not extend my hand against the man anointed by God. And my father, take a look. Here's the corner of your coat that I'm holding. I cut the corner of your coat and I did not kill you. I want you to recognize that I have no ill intent. I do not want to hurt you. I've done nothing wrong to you. And you're hunting me out to kill me. May Hashem judge between me and you. And may Hashem take revenge from you. But I won't be the one to hurt you. As the ancient allegory says, wickedness emanates from the wicked. So my hand will not be the one to harm you. After who is the king of Israel in pursuit? After who are you chasing? After a dead dog? After a little flea? What are you chasing after me? Hashem should judge between us and see how I've been kind to you and fight my fight against you. When David concludes his speech, so Shaul looks at him and he says, is that your voice, my son David? And Shaul starts crying. And he says to David, you know, you're more righteous than I. When he sees the cut coat, he recognizes the sign Shmuel had given him, that the one who would cut his coat would take the kingdom from him. And he sees that David has cut his coat. And he says, you know, you've paid me in kindness and I've paid you evil. And now you've shown that even though I was in your grip and you didn't kill me, a person finds his enemy and lets him go in peace, Hashem pays him back. Hashem should pay you in good. And now I know you're going to be king. Promise me that you won't wipe out my family. The most natural thing for David to do is wipe out Shaul's family. They're the enemies of David. Promise me you won't do that. David promises. David goes home. Shaul goes home. And David and his men enter fortified territory. They're not trusting Shaul anymore. Shmuel passes away. He's eulogized. And David spends his time out in the desert. So there's this man, a very wealthy man. His name is Naval. And Naval thinks that he should be the next king. He anticipates that Shaul will die. And he anticipates also that he should be the next king of Israel. He has a wife who is one of the seven prophetesses, a very beautiful woman by the name of Abigail. And she's very intelligent. He is very tough. He's a rough man. He is an evil person. I don't know how he ended up with a wife so pious. So David hears that Rosh Hashanah is coming, and Naval is shearing his sheep. In ancient times, when they sheared sheep, they'd make celebration, they'd have a big party. David wants food in honor of Yom Tov. He sends 10 lads to Naval, and he tells them, bless him. V'amartem kol echai. We bless you, just as things are going well for you this year. It's Rosh Hashanah. We bless you, you should have a blessed year. And in a year from now, you should also be living and with such prosperity. You should be in peace, your house should be in peace, and everything you own should be in peace. We heard you're making a party. You should know that so long as your shepherds were in our domain, we ensured they were never hurt. We ensured that they never lost anything. So long as they were in our territory, we took good care of your men. Why don't you check it out? You'll hear that your men benefited greatly from our army. And so now, you're making a party. We've always protected you. Why don't you send something from the party so that we could have a Yom Tov meal as well? Naval says to them, who's this David? Who is this guy, the son of Jesse? I hear there are a lot of knaves and slaves out there rebelling against their master. You think I'm going to give my bread and water and my cattle that I slaughtered, my meat, and give it to men who have no idea where they're coming from? So he puts them down. Here David is being called the great warrior of Israel. People are talking about him being king. And Naval purposely calls him a slave. He says, who's he? I'm not giving him anything. And so David's men turn back. And David tells his men, put on your swords. And then David puts on his sword. From here, Chazal say that when a court judges, the head of the court judges last. David says, put on your swords. He says, I want you to decide whether he is considered rebelling against the king. Do we kill him for what he said? And each one of his men says yes. And only after that does David express his opinion. And he takes 400 men and leaves 200 behind to guard the base. And they head out to Naval. It is nighttime. Yes, sir.
David is already king now?
Well, David's been anointed by Shmuel.
Already?
And Shaul already told him, yeah, Shaul already said, I know you're going to be the next king. David already has an army. So, back by Naval, Naval's wife Abigail gets summoned by one of the lads, and he tells her, you know, David sent messengers here to bless us, and our master, well, he disgraced them. They're good people. They never did anything bad. On the contrary, we benefited from being next to them. And they protected us day and night. So I strongly recommend that you do something, because the way he spoke, we're in real danger now. That's an army he just spoke against. That's a general he just spoke against. And you know what? Everything here is in severe danger from David after the message he sent back. And Naval is not a person who has any fear of heaven that I could try to talk to him and convince him. I'm talking to you. Abigail respects the warning. She right away prepares 200 loaves of bread, 2 flasks of wine, 5 prepared sheep, that's a large amount of meat, 5 large containers. Each container is a se'ah, so that's the equivalent of 6 kav, that's 30 kav, that's the equivalent of about 20 Coke bottles of sweet flour, 100 dried um, dried raisins and figs, and she takes this caravan of donkeys carrying all these goods to David. And she tells her servants, you guys go first, I'm coming behind you. And she doesn't tell Naval anything. She's riding down the mountain. There's this impasse between two mountains. David is coming down one side of the mountain, and Abigail is coming down the other side of the mountain. It is nighttime. And David says, all this time I took such good care of him and his men, and all this time that I gave them protection, and he pays me back evil under all the good I've done for him. So Hashem should pay all the enemies of David if I leave anyone alive till the morning. And as David is muttering this on his way down, Abigail is coming to meet him with her men. And Abigail sees David and she bows down from her donkey. She bows down before David all the way down to the floor, and she says, please, my master, I beg forgiveness for the wanton transgression against you. Let your maid speak before you. Please listen to me. What's she about to say? So she takes a cloth and she shows it to David, and she says, Rabbi, tell me, the stain on this cloth, is it blood or not? Am I menstruating? Am I forbidden to be near my husband or not? So he looks at her and he says, it's nighttime. How could I tell what's on the cloth in the middle of the night? So she says, ah, are you allowed to rule a case of the death penalty at night? You're ready to go kill. You can't rule on whether a woman is permitted or prohibited to her husband at night. But are you allowed to make a court's ruling at night and go execute someone at night? So he says, you're right, but I'm the king. And a king doesn't have to convene a court to kill someone who speaks disrespectfully against him. So she says, ah, really? Has anyone started using your coinage, my master? I haven't seen your coin going around. Have the people of Israel started using your coin? So he says, no. So she says, are you really the king? If they're not using your coin, are you allowed to kill someone who speaks disrespectfully to you? So David stumped. So she says, I apologize. It wasn't right. Please don't take to heart what this man who has no fear of heaven said. He's just like his name. The name Naval means a derelict, someone very filthy, and he is really an unworthy person. And your maid, I didn't see the lad you sent. But please, I swear by your life and by your soul, look at how Hashem protected you. You shouldn't spill innocent blood. Look, you would have made a big mistake, because what happens when David sees her? He gets very attracted. He runs over to her and he says, lady, what's your name? So she says, can I show you the cloth? So he says, I'm not allowed to look at the cloth right now. It's nighttime. So she says, okay, you're not allowed to touch me either. And she says, you know, Hashem has protected you from spilling two bloods. Murdering someone when halachically you're not allowed to, and being intimate with someone when halachically you're not allowed to. And Hashem should continue saving you. And just as Naval is not going to be able to stand up to you, so too any who seek to do you harm should not be able to stand up to you. Here I've brought you all this wonderful food. She says this beautiful speech, and she says, may you succeed. You are fighting God's wars. And in order to succeed, you shouldn't have this as something which will destroy you for your whole life, for being intimate with a woman you're prohibited with. And Abigail is hinting to him something she sees in a prophetic vision. She says, this shouldn't be your stumbling block. And she's indicating to David, just as you were about to stumble now, and I stopped you, you should know there's going to be another time. This shouldn't be a stumbling block. But down the road, you're still going to stumble on this very point you almost stumbled now. There's going to be a girl out there who you're going to be interested in, and you shouldn't be intimate with, but you will. And so Abigail is giving him forewarning. This amazing woman tells him, this shouldn't be your stumbling block for life. You don't want this to destroy you. You have to succeed as the warrior of the people of Israel. So David blesses her, and he says, blessed is Hashem who sent you here. You saved me from doing two things wrong. And blessed is your reasoning, and blessed are you. But I swear that it is God who has ensured I don't harm you today, because had you not come, by the morning, no one would have been left alive in Naval's home. And David takes the gifts she brought him, and he blesses her to go in peace. And he says, look, I've listened to you. I've accepted what you've said. And she comes back home, and Naval is partying. He's having this party. And he's full of himself. He's very happy. And he's gotten very drunk. And she doesn't tell him anything. He's steeped in his wine, and here we see her brilliance. In the morning, Naval is sober. And she tells him what just happened. That's another great thing. Sometimes a spouse feels like they must do something behind their spouse's back. But then they should tell them. Meaning, sometimes you need to on the moment. That doesn't mean you have to keep a secret. So the next morning she tells him. And he feels terrible. He suddenly realizes he was almost dead. And Rosh Hashanah passes, and Yom Kippur comes, and Naval drops dead. Now, Chazal say Hashem purposely gave him those 10 days, Aseret Yemei Tshuva, to do tshuva over what he had said to David. And he didn't take advantage of it. So when Yom Kippur came, he died. And David hears that Naval died, and he says, blessed is Hashem who fought my fight for me, who fought for my honor and saved me from doing something wrong. Hashem paid him back. And after Abigail finishes her mourning period, so David asks her if she's interested in marriage. And David's servants come to Abigail, and they say, David sent us, are you interested in marriage? She bows, and she says, I'm prepared to be the maid to wash the feet of the servants of my master David. Now this is a learned woman. This isn't someone who's, a maid. She's someone who's, she was the queen of the man who was fit to be king. And she goes with her female servants to David, and she becomes David's wife. So David has a wife, Abigail. This is one fulfillment of the prophecy that David was told that Hashem would give him his enemies' wives. That's Abigail. He marries Ahinoam from the city of Yisrael. And remember, he had a wife, Michal. So Shaul, you remember, Shaul held that Michal is not his legitimate wife. You remember, Shaul held the marriage was based on a loan. And David said, no, the marriage was based on the 200 foreskins I brought you. And so David took Michal and gave her to a big tzaddik named Palti ben Laish. Palti ben Laish is forced. The king told him, you marry my daughter. So when Abigail enters his tent, Palti ben Laish says, here's your bed, here's my bed, and he puts a sword in between. And he says, the day that one of us thinks of approaching the other, the sword should be his answer. He should die. You are legally David's wife, he tells her. He says to her, we will not touch one another. You are not my wife. Your father thinks you're not married to David. The halacha says David is right. You are married to David. And so Palti ben Laish is one of the giants of Jewish history. The king has ruled that he could marry her. The king has ruled he should marry her. And he says, the halacha is not like that. And so he takes her into the tent. No one else will marry her. And he takes care of her, and there's a sword in the tent, a reminder, we are never coming near one another. And Palti ben Laish will be with her for the coming months, and possibly year or two, it's going to be a few years, until he can return her to David. Yes?
So why is, in the future, why does he cry when he's giving her back to David.
Our tradition is that he was crying because he felt, I lived up to one of the greatest challenges a human being can have, and now I'm finished. It's like game over. I did my big challenge in life. Sometimes in life, we have a neighbor who had a child that from the moment he was born, they knew he wouldn't be able to live too many years, and he needed constant treatment and constant watching, because any time he stopped breathing, they would have to resuscitate him. So they would work in shifts. Part of the day he could be in a certain care center, but then the rest of the day and the night they would take shifts between him and his wife watching the child, sitting next to his crib making sure not to doze off. And then when the child was about 6, the child passed away. And at the funeral, this phenomenal human being spoke so beautifully about the child. And one of the things he said was, he said to the child, as he was burying his child, he said, "You taught us things we never knew. We lived a life of giving 24 hours a day. And we lived the most worthwhile life, being connected to you all the time. And now I pray," he said, "that the lesson we learned, that a person can be giving his whole life nonstop, is a lesson we won't forget. We'll just have to figure out how to implant it from now on, because we're going to have this void in our lives. How will we be doing this 24 hours a day?" He was able to speak beautifully. Another parent that same week in the same institution buried a child, and they spoke about how, "We tried keeping you in the basement. We tried to make sure you wouldn't bother everyone's lives. We tried to make sure the other kids would have a normal childhood. And you know what? Now you're at peace and we can be at peace." What a difference. Two different funerals. Two children, same institution. But this man, our neighbor, he said to the child, it was an experience living life with you. Being able to be a part of your life and you being a part of our life. So that's what Chazal say, that's why Palti Malayish was crying. He said, "I had the experience of a lifetime, taking care to ensure I'd be a pious person all these years." So again, the Zifim come to Shaul and they tell him David is hiding in our midst. And again, Shaul comes to the desert of Zif. Now what's happened here is that Shaul's men, Avner ben Ner, his chief general, had told Shaul, David didn't really have an opportunity to kill you. It's all a lie. He must have been in a place where he saw your cloak caught on a thorn bush and got torn off, and he picked it up and he came and said, "You see, I could have killed you." But he wasn't really there in that cave. Had he been in that cave, we would have killed him. We were all standing there. He knew he'd be finished if he tried. Nah, David didn't really come so close to you and cut off the corner of your cloak. And he convinces Shaul that everything David said is false. And so Shaul convenes his army and continues in pursuit of David in spite of what he said. And so this time David is going to play a different tactic. This time David sends spies and he finds out where Shaul is camping. And David at night approaches Shaul's camp. And he pays attention where the chief general Avner ben Ner is sleeping and where Shaul is sleeping. And Shaul is sleeping with the whole army surrounding him. And Hashem has caused the whole army to enter deep slumber. And so David enters the camp with his chief general, his own nephew Avishai. And Avishai tells David, "I got my spear here. One shot. I hit him, threw him into the floor. He's finished." Avishai tells David, "Give me a second. I won't have to hit him twice." And David tells him, "Don't. You think anyone could kill a person anointed by God and come away clean? I swear by Hashem, you touch him, I touch you." David tells Avishai, "You're not touching him. Hashem will kill him. Or his day will come to die. Or he'll die at war. But I'm not doing it. We're not touching one anointed by God." And David takes the spear and he takes the flask of water Shaul had right near his head. Now, why did David swear? Our sages say, because David also wanted to kill him. David saw him lying there. Here he was coming after David to kill David. And David also wanted to kill him. So David took a vow to take control of himself. He knew that if he swears, then he won't do it. So he swore not only to Avishai, but also to himself. Same story with Boaz. We will learn next semester. When Boaz swears to Ruth, "We're not doing anything tonight. We'll take care of it tomorrow morning." Our sages say the reason he swore was because he couldn't trust himself. He felt himself being very interested, and he said no. And he took a vow, so he wouldn't do it. So he takes the flask, he takes the spear, everyone's sleeping, and he crosses over to the next mountaintop, far enough room between them that they can't just catch him, and he calls out to the nation and to Avner, and he says, "Avner, I want your answer now. Avner, you have good answers. Give me an answer now. Avner, I hear you have good excuses about how the king's coat gets torn. So I want to hear your excuse now." Avner gets up. It's dark. And he says, "Who's calling into the king's camp? What's going on here?" So David says, "Avner, you're a pretty big man, huh? You're the one responsible for your master, the king. You know that a few minutes ago, someone wanted to kill him. I just saved his life. You know, it's not so long ago. Someone just wanted to kill your king. Where are you, Avner? You're the chief general. This doesn't seem to make sense, the way you're guarding your king. I swear by Hashem, all of you deserve the death penalty. You aren't watching God's anointed one the way you should. Why don't you go check, where's the king's royal spear? Where's his royal flask of water that was right next to his head?" Shaul has awoken. There's a ruckus in the camp. Shaul recognizes David's voice. And he says, "Is that your voice, my son David?" And David says, "It's my voice, my master the king." So David says, "Why? Why are you chasing after your servant? What have I done wrong? What have you found me doing that was evil? Listen, my master the king, please listen to what your servant is saying. If Hashem..." David is mentioning Hashem's name. We have to be very careful when we do that. David will regret the line he's about to say. "If Hashem has gotten you, has aroused you against me, so may Hashem take this as an offering, that I could have killed you and I didn't." And Hashem in Shemaim says, "Ha! So you're blaming me on this one." Now we have to ask ourselves, wait a second. On some level, David felt Shaul is suffering from depression. On some level, David is saying, "I don't know what's going on with him." And you see that Shaul, I was taught by my teachers that we should note that Shaul was never punished for his pursuit of David, because what he did was either legitimate halachically or out of his control. So David is saying, if Hashem got you riled up against me, well, there's room to question why that was wrong of David to say. But our sages say he made a mistake. Hashem says, "Me? I get people riled up? Okay, David, I'll show you." And we're going to see later on in Tanakh, David will pay a price for what he said here. "If men have caused you to be riled up against me, then they should be cursed before Hashem, because they've caused me to be chased away from Hashem, and I've been told, go worship other gods." Who told David to go worship other gods? I hope none of you have to go. Some of you have to go to Chutzarts this Pesach. I hope not. Because our sages say on this pasuk, what did David mean? I'm being told to go worship other gods. From this pasuk we learn that if you tell someone go to Chutzlaretz, that's the equivalent of telling him to go worship other gods. To leave Israel, you can't daven by Hashem the way you should. This is the pasuk we learn it from. So he's yes, because he had to go into exile. He had to go into Philistine territory. So David says, "Why should my blood be spilt before Hashem? The king of Israel is chasing this flea. Why? What have I done?" And so Shaul says, you know what, David, I'm wrong. Come back. I won't harm you anymore. I see that my life is really valued in your eyes. I've been very foolish. And I've made many mistakes here. And David yells back and he says, here's the king's spear. He doesn't answer. He's not coming back. He realizes he cannot trust Shaul's promises. But he's at least proven to Shaul and to Avner that he could have. He could have hurt the king. And so he says, let one of the lads come take your spear, and Hashem should pay back each person according to their behavior. If one is honest, so Hashem should give him back in honest and righteousness. Because Hashem gave you in my hands today, and I didn't want to extend my hand against the one anointed by God. And just as your soul was precious in my eyes, so too I pray that my soul should be precious in Hashem's eyes. He doesn't say in your eyes, right? He's not entrusting it to Shaul. May Hashem save me from all harm. He's alluding to the fact that he cannot trust Shaul's promises. And Shaul says, blessed are you, my son David. You will succeed. Yes, you will. And David goes his way, and Shaul goes back home. It's not over. But in certain ways, it's over. So David says, it's dangerous. I can't stick around here. David comes to a realization, he better run. And this is where we'll pick up, Ezrat Hashem, next semester. The final battle of David, the final battle of Shaul, this is where we're up to.